The Desert Island Discs with Flavia on Capital FM. Fresh hits for Uganda.
Welcome to Desert Island Discs. I'm Flavia, and every single Sunday we talk success or what it looks like for each of my guests. It's unique in its own way. Today, if you're anywhere close, oh my God, I have to stop calling it Twitter, on X, you must know Dr. Spia Sentongo, only because I think for the last couple of months, he has decided to take on something that sometimes gets him on the wrong side of the X or Twitter spaces, but who cares? It's all in the day of the struggle. You are an associate professor of ethics and identity studies at Uganda Matters University and Makerere University. It's Doctor, right?
Yeah,
Doctor Jimmy Spia Sentongo. You know, when I used to see, because you also, do I call you an artist? That's what it is. When I see your work, a cartoonist, I used to think that Spia was just a nickname.
No, it's really my name. It was my dad's name. He adopted it at university and then passed it on to me.
Opted it. So it was, he wasn't given?
I think he just loved the name and he chose to add it to his names because it doesn't appear on any other documents of his until university.
University. Yeah. And then he decided you should take it on as well. Okay. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Flavia.
It'll be good to get to know you. Let's start somewhere. We're going to go back into your childhood.
Well, it's mixed. I was born in Kampala, Chikoni. That's where we used to live. Yeah, but I was born specifically at Insambia Hospital. But all I remember is that I did my nursery around Wandege, a school which no longer exists. Then later we moved to Masaka. My father opted to leave. He was a civil servant.
Right.
So he opted to get closer to home because we are born in, our ancestral home is in Masaka. So he chose to go back closer to home. That is in the 80s.
Okay.
So I did all my primary studies in Masaka, Blessed Sacrament, Chimanya. Yeah, I think that's it about the childhood.
Was Masaka fun?
Yeah, sure, fun. Especially village life. It was fun, and given that we were a big family, a family of nine siblings.
And you're number what?
Number five. So I'm in the middle.
You're in the middle, yeah.
Yeah. So it was always fun being in the middle of so many stubborn people. Yeah.
Oh, and you're not the stubborn one?
Well, I was in my way, but I think others were equally, they would compete for the
right
trophy.
Yeah. you talked about dad. I didn't hear mom.
Yeah, mom. No, I only talked about dad because
for that moment,
it was his decision to go to Masaka. I don't really think that my mom was involved because she was a housewife. Yeah, but
it was we go.
Yeah,
no debates.
She had to go with her kids. But we grew up with our mom because she was a housewife. It meant that we spent more of the time with her. Yeah, at home. Whenever we'd be back from school or during holidays, we'd always go to the village and dig. She was the soldier of the two.
Oh, why does that happen? That the one who always stays with the kids the most has to be the bad cop.
I don't know, but I think it was also a personality thing.
Okay.
Their personalities were quite different.
Different, yeah.
My father was extremely reserved, the kind that would come back home from work, go to his bedroom. You only see him come back for supper, and after supper, he goes back to his bedroom.
Wow.
And my mother was the complete opposite. So even when you had done something wrong, it would be my mom to discipline you.
Not dad.
Dad, he would only watch on except when it was too much. Yeah.
So we're going to tell your father.
But even then, you wouldn't clearly know what he was going to do.
What?
Or he would just wait when you're seated somewhere, he's passing, and he gives you a knock on the head quietly without saying anything. Yeah.
You said he was a civil servant?
Yeah, he was, I think today you would call it permanent secretary. In the 70s, he worked, I think, in the Amin government as a I don't remember which ministries, I saw fisheries and something. Mm. But by the time he died in 93, he was, the title was by then DC in Luganda. Mm. I think DC was district executive secretary or district commissioner. I'm not sure of the two.
Okay.
Yeah, but that was his position, DC in Masaka.
Okay, so it was both going back home, but also to the position. Or was it going back home to Masaka?
Okay, it was going closer to home.
Closer to home.
But still as a civil servant.
Mm-hmm.
So up to the point of his death, he was a civil servant.
Civil servant,
yeah.
Yeah. why does that to me sound, and a typical Ugandan, sound like a very boring life? Because, you know, the civil servant life is a bit slow and movable. And
well, it depends on how you look at it, because boring is relative. Mm-hmm. I think given his personality, it wasn't boring because
he's already reserved.
In any case, he preferred his own silence, space, except when he was a bit high on something. That's when he acted normal like any other person. So right. I don't really think he would get bored.
Mm-hmm.
Because if he would be bored, he would have come out to talk to us at home.
But he didn't.
He preferred to stay in his bedroom. Yeah.
But you said you're more like him.
Yeah, a bit like, actually, I would say more like him.
Mm.
I think what you see, the social media personality,
is someone completely
something
different.
Else very different. That's for the activism or for... In fact, I would say that that's my entertainment. That's when I would say I'm out. So I go out on social media.
You'll
not find me in a bar. You'll not find me in a club. Very rare, except under influence of a friend. Yeah, so even for him... At home, well, sometimes he would talk, and when he spoke, when he talked, he was really a very funny man, quite witty, but that was rare.
Wow.
Yeah. He only talked normally when he had put in something.
Yeah. But you don't?
Rarely.
Oh, wow. You are your father's child, clearly. But I could tell from the first few minutes of talking to you here that you're quite reserved.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so it's a...
I thought I was successful in hiding
not
it.
Not at all. Also, it comes with the experience of talking to people over time, so you get to notice. What's your first song choice?
Together as One, like a duo.
On Capital FM, fresh hits for Uganda.
It's Desert Island Discs. I have Dr. Jimmy Spire Sentongo, and your first song choice was Together as One, the late Lucky Dube. You said if the world was freer, you would probably have dreadlocks. For some reason, I did think you had dreadlocks. I think it's the cartoonist role that you have. Because now I'm trying to place, sometimes when people tell their stories when they're childhood, it sounds a bit obvious. Mom was this, dad was this, I became this, the environment was this. Yours, I can't place, you know, what life would then turn out to be. But talk to me about school, the experience of, you know, how you went to school. Most of this, the beginning was Masaka, of course. And then later, you moved to Kampala.
Yeah, I moved to Kampala, but that was much later.
Much, much later.
Yeah. Because after primary school, I went to Bukala Samaina Seminary. My mother had wanted...
Seminary?
Yes, I was in a seminary. Our mother had wanted at least one of us to become a priest.
Yeah.
I don't know for what reason. Mm. So my elder brother, one of them, tried and he was expelled. I went next. Actually, even the one I come next to, he tried the interview. He didn't succeed. I went next. I was expelled.
Wait, what?
Yeah.
What gets expelled. You expelled from a seminary?
No, it was... well,
or is it that everything is expellable in a seminary? Well,
I would look at it as trivial, maybe for the sake of showing that I was not really stubborn. It was, you heard of the Chick magazine?
Yeah, back in the day, yeah.
Yeah, that Chick magazine. We were sent home for school fees, and then one of us came back with 5 of those magazines. Of course, by seminary standards, that was considered
why did you have 5?
But
up
to now, I don't really find a problem with that magazine. Yes, I know there was a picture in the
nudity, some sort of
semi-nude. Yeah, so when he came back with them, we almost fought for them just to read.
Yeah.
And then they conducted a search. Everyone that was found with a copy the next day. That was the end of it.
No explanations or nothing.
Not really. I was just given a small cheat.
Yeah.
Advising me to try my talents elsewhere.
Oh.
And by then my mother had just died. That is, I had to join a secular school for the last 2 terms. And that's where I get a chance to study a bit of art. Because in the seminary they don't teach art. So I studied art for 2 terms. I had an uncle who was in Tanzania, a priest, and he asked me, are you still interested?
In being a priest?
Yeah, in being a priest. I said, yeah.
Were you interested?
I was interested, but I would say for the wrong reasons. One, because my mother wanted me to become a priest.
Yeah.
So it was partly my mother's dream. 2, because I wanted to prove the other seminary wrong.
Those that expelled you.
Yeah,
to try your talents elsewhere.
I wanted to come back as a priest and I got
and
to visit
show you.
Them. Yeah, so I went to Tanzania. That's where I did my A-levels, 5 and 6. And from there, I went to the major seminary. The congregation was called Apostles of Jesus. I went to major seminary in Kenya for 3 years. That's when I realized I was in the wrong place. And I chose to leave.
Right.
Yeah, but I was satisfied that I left on my own.
Paint a picture for us, because maybe we're going to hear a seminary and a priest and not understand really. And I'm a Catholic, so I was raised deeply rooted in seminaries and understanding all of that. But it's still a bit far, you know. You look at the nuns and the priests as there, and then you're here. You never really get to understand their life fully. So you, who was almost really in it, what's life like? What is doing well and not doing well?
Yeah, I think the seminary, apart from the prayer side, much of it is, much of the environment is the same as what you find in a secondary school, only that this is more strict. You have prayers every day. You have mass, daily mass. And then you'll have morning, afternoon, and evening prayers. And you're being observed much of the time. Not only observing your academic performance, your discipline, your relations with others. So I don't really find much different except in terms of the discipline. But the syllabus is...
It's like going to a normal school. Yeah.
In terms of the academics.
Yeah.
It's like going to a normal school. But the discipline is what I would say is more emphasized than prayer.
Okay. So why were they wanting you to stay as a priest versus leaving? I mean, you clearly weren't happy there. You were leaving.
Yeah, I was saying that maybe it wasn't for the right reason, because I was an artist and I had painted so many things there. If you went to the church, you went to the classrooms, there were paintings of mine all over in the dining halls. So I think they developed a special connection and attachment with me. They would have wanted me to continue.
Because of your work?
Yeah, because of the work. And second, I was performing well academically. Our seminary was affiliated to a university, a Catholic university in Rome.
Mm.
And for over 20 years, they had not gotten a first class.
So I was here. You were.
I was the first to get the first class. And then I'm telling them that.
That you want to go?
Yeah. So they were not really happy. Mm. But I don't think they really gauged my calling, my vocation, as it's called.
Yeah.
Because I really dodged mass a lot. Sometimes I would dodge from Monday up to Sunday.
Oh, dear.
Yeah.
You, yeah, it wasn't
was that
your,
bad.
Mm.
So I keep wondering for someone who
why did they want me
mass
there?
Like that, why would they want me to stay? They would have been the first to say that, no, I think this is not your place.
Wow.
Yeah.
What's your second song choice?
One Love, Bob Marley.
Bob Marley.
Desert Island Discs on Capital FM. Fresh hits for Uganda.
Desert Island Discs, I have Dr. Jimmy Spies Sentongo. And at some point you said, I think in your last end of school, you discovered art. With the kind of talent you have, what do you mean you discovered it at that point? I feel like you got out of the womb drawing, you know?
Yeah, I had been drawing, I think, from primary school. I remember from around P2 because I still have some of my primary school
work.
Books, and I see drawings of President Museven. I think by then I was really obsessed with certain figures. President Museven, Salim Saleh, File, and Kategea.
Wow.
At least I see them featuring a number of times. So I started drawing much, much earlier, and I had a brother, my elder brother, who was much better than me in art.
Oh.
Yeah. So much of the time I would be inspired by what he was doing. Whenever I would see him draw, I would also get a paper and start drawing.
Mm.
He had gotten a chance to study art, unlike me.
Mm.
He left the seminary quite early.
He's the one you said left the seminary.
Yeah, he left in senior two, and he was studying art all through from that time. Because I had that
influence.
Yes, the influence from home, but also the talent, because art is more of a talent. In fact, it's like a spirit that keeps pushing you. You cannot run away from it.
Wow.
Even if you choose to do other things, it will always come back.
Wow.
So when I'm expelled from Bukalasa Seminary and I join Chimanya Secondary, I join a class. There was a teacher I still remember, is called Master Kasozi. So he found that we were about 10 people who had joined, and this was the second term of Senior 4. So he found about 8 of us had joined. I think he did not really want to get any bad results in his paper.
Yeah.
He said, I see so many new faces, but I'm going to give you an assignment. If you don't perform, you leave. We had to draw a stem. It had been uprooted with a cassava. So we started drawing. I did not have an art pencil. He gave us paper. I drew with an ordinary pencil. He was also somewhere drawing. At some point, he stood up and started moving around.
Yeah, just to supervise.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So he reaches where I was seated and he stands for a few minutes looking. Then he asks, did you say you didn't study art?
Oh, wait, because at that point you actually hadn't studied art.
No, I hadn't. I said, no, this is the first formal class of art that I'm sitting in. Then he went back to his place and he rolled his drawing. I told the class, in case you get any problem from today, consult him. Yeah, so that's how the art journey starts, but it was to end shortly after, because after Senior 4, when I join another seminary, I find the same story, no art. Yeah, although even there, I was lucky that the priests were quick to realize that I had that talent. They gave me a special room, an art room that was specifically mine, and that's where I was doing my other mischief, the cooking. I had an entire room to myself. That is too much for someone in Senior 5 and in a seminary. So that's where I started experimenting with things, with sculpture, with painting, with drawing, with mosaic. Until I get to the major seminary, still they were very supportive. So I would say that maybe I was lucky that even if I had gone to university to study art, maybe I wouldn't have gotten the support that I got in a seminar.
Because that's interesting for me, because I mean, it's one thing to say this person can draw, but for people to go out of their way to give support and to give you space to be the creative, they really must have seen great talent. I mean, I know you're talented because I've seen the work now, but I'm like, what were they? Because I don't know if I would have been that, I would have the discernment to support someone to that extent. But maybe the calling, you know, brought you the resources and the people.
Yeah, the calling, and maybe they had seen something, but they were really, really supportive. Anything I would ask for, the expensive paints, the canvases, they would just provide. In fact, I was more or less like a special student in the seminary, special seminarian, who would have everything provided for him. Yet others who had different talents, I don't think.
No, didn't necessarily get the treatment. What's in the eye and the mind of an artist that you could share with us?
I've come to believe that some of these things are pre-wired in us in ways that we can't even understand. I also look at other people doing things effortlessly, maybe someone working on radio, they don't even really need the training. Others have gone through the training, but it just comes naturally, some singing effortlessly. So even with art, at times I draw a cartoon, and once I'm done with it, I ask myself, how have I been able to do this?
Right.
You're also amazed by your own work, and you cannot explain, you know, yes, I go through the creative process of getting an idea, thinking through it, thinking through the different possible angles of executing it, but you're never quite sure about how it's going to come out. So when it's eventually out, you're also amazed
that this is your work. Right.
So what goes on in the mind, I can only talk about the inclinations that you would find with artists. Generally, these seem to cut across. Artists tend to be very keen on detail. They tend to be very observant. Everywhere you go, you immediately want to see how things are arranged. You immediately want to see how the colors relate to each other, how the people fit within space, how they behave.
Right.
So that's why when I studied philosophy, I quickly loved it, because there is a lot in common between philosophy, its emphasis on thinking, and art.
Okay, I guess it's a creative streak, so I guess it's pretty much the same as every creative, because they also can't explain how they get to the, you know, to whatever they end up getting to. What's your next song choice?
Ghetto Pain by Dwayne Stevenson.
Okay.
So reggae.
Dreadlocks, you're getting closer to them.
Discs on Capital FM. Fresh hits for Uganda.
It's Desert Island Discs, and I have Dr. Jimmy Spires and Dogo. You're an artist who I like how you explain. When you see things, you see the colors. You see you sort of like how things merge. So you're telling us you get out of the seminary. Okay, there you had been there. You had done the art. You said that I had done some great work. So I can see how they selfishly wanted me to stay because of the talent. Where does the journey go to after that?
When I leave, actually, I wasn't sure where I was going. Okay. All I was sure about was
this is not where you want to be.
Yes, it's okay. Not my place. I had thought of teaching at university because many people were saying that if you have excelled, you have a first class. That's one of the things you can do. With philosophy, you don't even know many jobs that would require philosophers. I looked through the adverts when I came back here, not anything.
No one says if you've graduated first class in philosophy, come.
Nothing close to philosophy, except just one time when it was Ernst & Young. They wanted anyone with a first class, and I applied. But this was for auditors.
Yes.
So I apply, I go through the aptitude tests. Mm. Then we go to the second level. It was Excel. Third level, I meet the panel. By then, I had started my master's, but it was also not related. Some gentleman asked me, what's your career focus? I remember fidgeting with that question. I tried to explain, I also studied this, I'm project planning. Okay, but what is your career focus? Yeah. I'm looking at your papers and I'm trying to see how you move from
Where's the pattern?
And you end up in auditing. Do you really have a plan? I left that room knowing that.
Yeah.
I have failed. So
he gave you clarity.
Yeah. So I had gone back for masters after 1 year.
Yeah.
Getting more conviction that I'm supposed to teach. Mm. Of course, you're just trying. You don't know if you're going to get in position. I went to Makerere and I did a master's in ethics and public management. Good enough, when I was finishing in my second year, I see an advert from Nkozi, Uganda Matters University.
Yes.
They wanted a teaching assistant. In fact, there were positions for teaching assistant lecturer, but I decided to apply for the lowest to increase my chances. Applied for teaching assistant. Yeah. That's how I get into teaching. So I continue, I later get a scholarship, a Commonwealth scholarship for another master's in ethics, rather education for sustainability. Mm-hmm. But I just did that because it was a scholarship, but also because it was education and now I was getting into
education,
teaching.
Yeah.
Now, midway into that master's, I get a PhD scholarship. Mm-hmm. So I started thinking, do I have to drop this one to start on the PhD? Mm-hmm. I cannot combine the two. I said I can try.
To do both?
Yeah, so I continued and I did both. Mm-hmm. And I was able to finish them. I did both while studying, working at the same time. Mm-hmm. I wasn't able to get leave, so I finished that second master's 2011 and the PhD 2015.
Drawing cartoons, you know, because it's like, until I got married to someone who's a sports journalist, I used to say, no one read the back pages, unless you were a guy. Mm-hmm. Because it's sport, and unless you really understand it and have a passion for it, you're not really going to read the back pages. Mm-hmm. The cartoon, it's humor. Mm-hmm. I think it's supposed to be humorous. Mm-hmm. Some people might get stung, but it's supposed to be humorous.
Yeah.
And I feel like, okay, do you not get caught up in having to, because now today on online, on social media, you're in the story. Mm-hmm. Because that's what I feel like your role as a cartoonist is. You literally have to be in the story to be able to draw it from a certain perspective, you know? And you come off as a very reserved guy, and you've also sort of accepted that you are. And you're doing things as, okay, it's a passion, it's whatever. But now you are doing art that goes into the story, goes into the society's trending conversations. Is that a good or bad thing in the beginning? Or did it change over time?
No, it's actually what I wanted.
Really?
Being reserved, it doesn't mean that I didn't want to follow what was happening. I wanted to be totally out of society. Mm. I want to observe, but from my own space.
Right, and that was a good
way to observe, to influence, but without being out there.
And holding a microphone.
Holding a microphone on the streets with placards. Mm. I just don't like activity that involves my physical involvement.
Right.
Yeah. But if I'm in the background behind the screen and no one is seeing, I'll do all sorts of
things. That's why.
Yeah.
That's why those cartoons sting like that.
Yeah, so for the cartoons, it gives you... I know that if I was before those people, the ones that I criticize, I don't think I would have criticized them the same way.
Right.
Because, first of all, I easily get attached to people and I feel empathetic. I would even feel bad watching a person receiving my criticism. I think I would change it if I was before them. Mm. As cartoonists, what I've read, the testimonies of some other cartoonists, you advise to stay away as much as possible from your victims, and usually the victims are politicians.
Yeah.
So stay
away. Because they're the most in the stories anyway.
Yes, the moment you get close, it will be very hard for you.
To draw.
Yeah, you want to laugh about Nabanja or someone, but... you have this personal attachment. You say, now, if I draw Nabanja like this, isn't she going to feel bad? But once I'm not close,
you just do what you need
to
do.
There will be no emotional attachment.
Yeah. When you started out, you said 2006, and you started to draw. And because tell me what it is. Do they just give you the top story and say, draw from this? Or do you pick what in the trending stories you would draw?
Sometimes at the beginning, they would give me stories. Right. That's if I went there without anything in mind.
In mind, yeah.
Times I wouldn't be following. You're so busy with the teaching. So you go there, the editor says, okay, think around this topic. But over time, that stopped. I think that's about 8 years ago. Mm-hmm. So I've just been coming up with all the ideas on my own. Mm-hmm. It's not the editor. Actually, I don't even go to the paper, to the offices to meet the editor. I just draw and send. I've spent about 5 years without visiting the Observe offices.
Wow.
Yeah.
You just send your work.
Yeah, I just draw and send.
And somehow it's in line with what needs to be said, shown.
Over time, you get to learn.
Is there a measure of what is that you're supposed to draw?
It's there, but it's not written anywhere.
Okay.
You just get to learn over time. Okay, if I draw something like this, that will be over the line and they might not accept it. So you just keep yourself within a space that you have been observed to know that this is acceptable, this is not.
And so why I ask is that, when did you first realize that, okay, I'm not really drawing for the 6-10 people. This is, you know, not necessarily got you in trouble, but got many eyeballs and comments on it. What was that first cartoon that you drew?
I can't even recall because for the newspaper cartoons before social media, you wouldn't really know.
If you, the feedback wouldn't come back to you.
Yeah, you just meet a few people, those that are close to you. Yes. Like, oh, I saw your cartoon in the newspapers, but those were really few.
Few, true.
So it's,
or for them to even know it was you. You know, that's also another thing. Some back in the day,
yeah,
not everybody.
Only those that knew me.
Yes.
Only those that knew me and that I had told I was drawing. But most often you wouldn't get any feedback.
Yeah.
It's not until
social media
starts that you get all this feedback and you know, okay, this cartoon is really working, this one, no. Yeah.
What's your fourth song choice?
Home to Africa, PJ Powers, Ready and Weasel.
Ah.
Yeah. PJ Powers, Radio and Weasel. Cause all doors, love will open a window.
I'm going home to Africa to feel the love in Africa. I'm going home to Africa to feel the life. We feel the sun wrap her arms round this great land. Sounds of children and laughter fill the air. In my heart I know there's nothing to compare. And I'm singing,
strangers in Africa. All of the pastures so green, all of the people so real. What do you feel how I feel? Let's go to Africa.
I'm going home to
Silent Discs with Flavia on Capital FM. Fresh hits for Uganda.
It's Desert Island Discs, and I have Dr. Jimmy Spire Sentongo. That was Home to Africa. PJ Powers and Radio, well, the late radio, and so he's on that. You talked about how, yes, you started to think maybe I need to be careful, you know, because nowadays, not just about social media, there's a lot that can offend people.
Mm-hmm.
You know? It's almost like to construct a sentence, you must remove everything and leave the. But so I can understand how hard it is to do your job. But does it also get exciting? Because people who are creatives love a challenge. The more they have to think and the more they have to dig, the better. Is it that way for you and art?
Yeah. It's the same. And as you've said, yeah, you have to be very careful. The different, if I may call them constituencies, the different constituencies you have to be careful about. It might not be offensive to women, but what will the children think? It might not be offensive to children, religious people. So you have to be careful, and it affects creativity.
Yes.
But at the same time, you would have to, you have to be conscious of the fact that you live in a society. And it's not just about the message you want to put out there. You also have to realize that your interests might not be the same as others' interests. And sometimes all these interests are legitimate.
Yes.
You have no right to offend someone over nothing, just the fact that they are different. So you have to constantly think through all that.
Wow.
Sometimes I draw a cartoon and I keep it.
Oh.
I realize after I have drawn that, okay, this could offend. Especially where I, in my judgment, I feel that that category of people are innocent.
Okay.
I wouldn't want to offend anyone for the sake of offense. So I say, okay, if these are going to find offense with this,
let me keep it.
Yeah.
Back then it was Twitter, so I'm just going to stick to it. At first I thought, he's just tweeting something. And then you know how you just pass, you're like, wait, this conversation is still going on? And then wait, he's serious. I think, was it one pothole that annoyed you? Two potholes, three potholes, because we all live in a country with potholes, and I think also that's the detriment of our society, is that you get used to the bad, that it becomes like, okay, why are you complaining? And you're like, but wait, it's bad. You should complain, but because you've laid in the bed so long, you forget that it has some things that bite, you know. But what triggered you?
I think this was something that was building over time.
Okay.
Just like the times you can find yourself angry and you don't really know what has made you that angry, yet there are a number of factors that have been accumulating. You think that it's just about the trigger, but it's not really that trigger. Driving around Kampala, if you drive, but I think everyone
experiences potholes
from whichever means they use. So driving around Kampala, you'll always get your car breaking down, you'll always be inconvenienced, traffic jam, the so many things that you have to go through, but also the reputation that you have out there. When you travel and you have to be known for the wrong things. In the past, we would be asked about Amin.
Yeah.
You're in a country, the moment you mention from Uganda, oh, Idi Amin. But these days, it's not Amin. If they are not asking you about brutality and torture, they're asking you about the president who has stayed forever. And now with the potholes, whoever has visited Kampala, they would say, Kampala's potholes. So you feel like you have to say something, but you're not really convinced enough that you should say it, or you don't even know how to say it.
Yeah.
So one time I'm driving behind someone who had a small car. I think it was a Wish, Balintuma Road. And he hits a huge pothole. The bumper flies off. So the guy gets out of the car, stands. He could only look. He couldn't even say anything. He couldn't collect his bumper. He stood for a few minutes. And even those of us who were behind him, you couldn't hoot or...
Because you can see.
Yes, because you were seeing what was happening. It's a road I was using every day. I knew how terrible that spot was. I think he was new to it. So I asked myself, but isn't there anything we can do?
Yeah.
As you have said, we have gotten used to it, to this. And we have tried all other means. People have petitioned parliament. People have spoken. People have everything that you would consider to be civil.
Even the fixing is quick fixing.
Yes. So I said, I had heard of, an exhibition early around 2008 or 6, thereabout. There is someone who had organized a pothole exhibition, but it was supposed to be physical pictures exhibited.
Yes, yes.
And police did not allow it to happen. So I just, my mind went back to that and I said, but can't we do this online? And that one was foiled because it was in a physical place.
But how are you going to find everybody with a phone and tell them to not post? Yes. I get you, yeah.
So I first try it out. I say, I talked to a friend who wants to do a pothole exhibition. What do you think of this idea? And I saw a barrage of comments. No, right. Let's go ahead. We are ready. We have the photos. I said, okay, this can work.
But what kind of results did you want out of that activism? Was it just to shine a light on the fact that there's still a problem? We still have this problem?
Of course,
or were you hoping
The one result that you want is for the roads to be fixed, but you're doubtful that
will happen.
Because,
yes,
as I said earlier, a lot has been tried before you. But now what I was thinking, if all the civil means cannot work, at least let them be embarrassed. I know that except if one's conscience has died, there are certain things that you will not want to be on your face and your capital city. I knew the conversation would very quickly go outside Uganda,
and
they would be talking about it in Kenya, wherever. So to be a leader of a city or of a country where your capital city is the talk of every other person on
the
continent
wrong reasons.
And beyond for the wrong reasons, I knew that they would be embarrassed and at least be pushed to do something. So when we started tweeting and I see some people saying it was faster, this RCC was in Rengo by then, Hood. This is putting the country to shame.
You're showing our bad problems to the world.
Get your dirty linen and put it out in the public. I said, by the time you get your dirty linen and put it out there, you have tried everything else. So if this is what we must do for the problem to be solved, then we have to do it. And the more they said that, the more people flooded Twitter with pictures. At a certain point, I was not the driver. The exhibition had gotten a life of its own, and it was driving itself.
Because was it meant to be that you asked for a certain day at a certain time for people to share pictures of any pothole?
No, I only had to start it.
Okay.
So I told them that on this particular day we are starting, but we shall wait until KCCA tweets anything or any government official, and under their tweet we start flooding them with pictures of potholes.
Yeah.
So that day KCCA was quiet. They usually communicate from morning.
They could tell.
They didn't tweet anything until around midday the president tweets something. So I went to the president's under that tweet. I commented with a pothole, and then people started. KCCA comes later, the following day actually, that's when they resumed tweeting, but people had already started. The photos were all over. It was quite easy because first there was fun to it. Just like you get used to a problem and you can only laugh about it. People were seeing pictures of potholes that they couldn't imagine, saying, oh, is this also
there was even
color?
A competition of like, this pothole is deeper than the other pothole. That's true.
And
yeah.
I had indicated to make it satirical.
Yes.
Add the fun to it that you also measure the width.
That's what I'm saying. Someone's like, oh, you think that's a big pothole? Wait till you see this
one. There were potholes, some in the shape of a heart. There was one of Mickey Mouse.
Oh, good Lord.
Yeah, so it was so much fun, so much fun about an unfortunate thing.
Yes.
Yeah.
But sometimes, even with activism, even when it means well, there's good and bad that comes out of it.
Yeah, it was painful, but seeing that the ministry was also not settled, it made me happy. And before I know it, the permanent secretary has blocked me. Actually, I had just gone there to her page to check something. I don't remember what it was. And I see you're blocked.
Yeah.
I say, now what have I been blocked for? I say, okay, now, although this is unfortunate, let me just get some capital out of it. So I start making noise about this. Dr. Twine, you have blocked me. You have to unblock me. We have to speak
to
you.
Have a conversation.
Whether you like it or not, you're supposed to be responsive. You're supposed to be serving us. And then we also issued a threat, which I didn't really mean to execute. That if you don't unblock, we are going personal. That the entire weekend is going to be dedicated to you.
Oh, wow.
Friday evening. She has unblocked
oh,
me.
Oh, come on. I wanted to see how this would... She shouldn't have unblocked you.
Yeah, she unblocked...
What's the good over the time that has come out of this activism?
Best thing that has come out of it is the empowerment of people. Mm. Perhaps not so much in what has been addressed, what has been done. In some cases, we have had problems solved.
Yeah.
The NGO exhibition, it led to so much conversation in the NGO sector, which is still ongoing up to now, especially on accountability. But apart from all that, I felt that so many people had withdrawn. Many people had resigned to their fate, feeling, well,
What can we do?
We simply just have to sit and watch.
Yeah.
Getting messages, so many messages from people telling you, even those that I would meet, you really encouraged me to start taking matters of my country seriously. I also got the courage to tweet something. I also sent a picture of a pothole. I sent a picture of a health center. And some have never looked back since then.
Right.
I see them actively tweeting. Mm. I think that was the greatest contribution. And maybe it's going to lead to other innovations. You know, you simply come to the stage, do your part, others take over. Even if you have to leave at some point, you know that you have lit a candle that is going to spread more light.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's the thing that I'm happiest about.
Right.
The exhibitions, some people came on board in terms of those who are driving it. I first brought Toko, Godwin Toko, because I didn't want this to appear to be a spire thing where everyone focuses on you, and even if it means pushing you out of it, it's you that they would be targeting.
You're the problem.
Yeah, you're the problem, but I also wanted the public to own it, everyone to know that Spire doesn't have his own interest, that he's just holding on to this thing. Now it's his card that people immediately suspect that you have political
ambitions.
That
you're going to even commercialize it. And
yeah, or commercializing, or you have political ambitions, you want to come stand for MP or whatever.
But you don't. You don't have those ambitions?
No, not really, not at all. At a certain point, Toko hands over to Agatha. Agatha.
For the NGOs especially,
yeah,
she was quite vocal.
Then Agatha handed over to someone else.
Okay.
Yeah, so now it has...
Has legs,
said,
has moved.
Yes, it has moved. I don't even have to be part of it for it to continue.
And you're okay with that?
Yeah, I'm okay with that. I didn't want to own it.
Okay. And as we wrap, I want to... You know, when someone sees the persona online, and this, and you're quick to say they're two different people. The one online is able to make all the noise and say everything, but in person I'm quite different. Do you have really a stand? I think that's what I would say. Because you see how you said, I wanted to do something. There were potholes and we had resigned ourselves to this and I wanted to do something. You were able to do that sort of activism that was there. Is that it? Are you the kind of person who would say, even the next time something makes me uncomfortable, I will do what I can within my means, but that's as far as I go.
Yeah, and I had always been doing this, that, only that this time I think it got more visibility because of Twitter and perhaps its nature.
Right.
The nature of the exhibitions, but I had always been doing that. I was drawing cartoons, that was activism of some sort. I was writing a column in The Observer. Even on social media, I had been vocal about especially injustices, about things that I felt uncomfortable with, or generally the kind of Uganda that I would want to see.
When you look at your life, where's the satisfaction? Where's the self-actualization for Spire?
The self-actualization is actually within that.
Mm.
Seeing that I'm making a contribution to society, that makes me happy.
Mm.
Meeting a person, a student, much of the time I'm at Makerere, but you meet students of different courses, students I don't teach, and they tell you, I follow you on Twitter, thank you for this, I remember this particular cartoon, and it has made me reflect on this and that. Yesterday there is a student of literature, he brought me a poem, he said this poem was inspired by your article in The Observer, and the poem was... Jimmy Spire Sentong or something, or kissing Jimmy Spire Sentong. Yeah, that really motivates me. It gives me satisfaction. Quite often I'm paid to do things and I put them on the side. I focus on what I'm not paid for. Many of the cartoons you see online, no one pays me for them. I don't actually earn from many of the cartoons. Sometimes I have, as I've said, a lot of work that is pending, which I have to be paid for.
Yeah.
Busy on cartoons, I'm busy on social media activism. unlike maybe those who are working for NGOs, they are facilitated, run this campaign, run that. All the campaigns that I've been running, I have not received even a single coin from anyone. So that's where my satisfaction comes from. Whoever contributed to my education, I think I have paid back. That makes me happy.
You've made a difference to other people, which is your way of paying back.
Yeah, but also that there are so many people I admire, people who have made a contribution to society, those we celebrate, we put their images in our rooms, the Mandelas, the world, but you keep asking yourself, why should I be admiring others, yet I'm not willing to make any sacrifice to come, even if it's just far from them, but making some bit of contribution to change my society.
Thank you for standing for something. And thank you for not doing it at a place where all of us would feel intimidated to say, of course, well, you're doing it at, you know, you're doing it at a place where, wait, even I could do that, you know, where someone feels like you said, it started with you, but everyone else felt, wait, I can also do that. If that's impact, I can do that. So thank you for changing the face of what impact actually even looks like. And it's been a beautiful story. I want to know your final song choice.
Africa by Ronald Mainje.
Okay. Wonderful.
Earlier on at my
Inga. Yes. Oh, right now you're not a fan.
I'm a fan of his music.
The music.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you for sharing your story, Dr. Spire.
You're welcome.
Although Spire is your dad's name, so it will be Jimmy.
Jimmy. Spire is a middle name, actually.
Yes. So what does it mean? Or you never really
took the time to find the interest? It means something which I'm not sure if it's related.
It was his interest, anyway.
It means that high thing on buildings, on churches.
Yeah,
that's the spire. But some people have said that it's our family name, but I cannot be an African with spire as a family name.
As a family name, you're right.
Some of my siblings have adopted it, that's why people think that it's a family name, but it's not.
Well, it's been a pleasure meeting you, and thank you for sharing your story. You can find this and many others on anywhere you get podcasts as Capital FM Uganda. Good night.
Desert Island Discs with Flavia on Capital FM. Fresh hits for Uganda.